So we're talking about canceling, just canceling it. Just one swipe of the pen. President Trump could do it right now. No congressional approval necessary. Just eliminate the student loan debt system. It's a broken system. It's putting a crimp on the economy. It'd be a great way to revitalize things, and it would cost nothing because all this money has already gone out the door and we've already made money off of it. So it's, you know, could we make more if we continued to shoot ourselves in the foot? Yep. But I think really our guest tonight is making a very reasonable case. He was also making a very reasonable analogy. Unfortunately, we had to go to the break. So we'll get back to that in just a second and get rest of your calls in coming up next. For Alan Kalinge, Student Loan Justice on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Alan Kalinge was just telling this story, explaining by way of analogy the issue about constructed trusts, that all contracts are constructed trusts. This was Bruce's point, but I had to stop because we got to the top of the hour. So you were saying, let's say you bought a Tesla, and you drove it off the lot, you come up to the first stoplight, then you find out that there's no brakes on the Tesla. Now go ahead and finish the rest of that, if you would. Oh, wait. We missed him.
Oh, okay. How's that?
Oh, no, now we hear you. Go ahead.
So you go back to the dealership. Your car, for whatever reason, had no brakes, no brake pedal even. And the dealership people look at you and they go, well, hey, buddy, you should have read the manual. This particular Tesla just happens not to come with brakes. So my question is, you know, who's the bad guy there? Who's the bad faith actor there? And to maybe drag the analogy just a bit further, suppose you're waiting around for the tow truck and you hear the salesman snickering behind the partition, talking about how they're going to spend the money that they're going to get from an insurance claim that they took out against you. Well,
that's interesting.
That's a great analogy for what's happening with the student loan problem. There are no bankruptcy protections. The students are never made explicitly aware of this fact. No statutes of limitations. Students are never, ever told. I mean, this is an omission that I don't know that it's ever been ruled on. I suspect it has not. But this really calls into question the legitimacy of the contract in the first place.
All right. Now let's bring Bruce back into it from South Carolina. Does that answer to your point, Bruce?
No, it does not.
Okay, why?
The reason I called in is this is a remedy because it is a fraud from its start.
What is?
The loan.
So we can. Start. Yeah, because, so what you're saying is. Isn't that what he just said?
No. I think we're on the same side here. No. Well, we're going in the same direction, but you're way off base. You got a remedy in the court, in the Chancery Court. That is ruled by equity. You go into the 21 maximums of equity and find out if there is any intent of that car, and they know this, even if it's in the manual, they sold that car under bad intentions.
Right.
Yes.
Well, right. That is the law in equity.
Yeah.
You cannot go into a court or into a contract or a trust with bad intentions.
I don't know where we disagree. So
I agree with Bruce completely.
Yeah,
this is a bad faith contract from the get-go.
So when I ask you, doesn't that answer to it? And you say no.
I think it doesn't because you've got remedy in the court instead of going to the executive branch to get remedy from everybody.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there.
Unfortunately, as a practical matter, Bruce, the courts – they are stacked completely against the borrower.
That's his point, but I think it's sort of a distinction without a difference, except he's saying, here's another way to get rid of it. Okay, but that's going to be the harder way to get rid of it, right? I mean,
you know, even to this day, you know, there are many very good constitutional grounds to challenge the validity of this lending system. And in the 15 years I've been following this, I have not found even one lawyer with good standing who had the spine, the will, or otherwise to pursue such a claim in the courts. And to date, the Supreme Court has chosen not to even rule on any number of cases that I have seen attempted by people representing themselves, et cetera.
Right.
The courts are stacked against us on this one, my friend, and as a practical matter, you may very well be right. In fact, I would say you are right. This is clear bad faith, and provably so.
Yeah, I think that was our point. So if it's bad faith, let's just get rid of it. We don't have to worry about taking it each one of these cases to a court. Wildcard line, Ed is in Sacramento on Coast to Coast. Ed?
Good evening, gentlemen. My answer to the loan is you get the loan because I'm on disability.
Right.
You get the disability form from the loan people, take that loan information, that document to the doctor, have the doctor to sign it, and it clears you up the loan.
Really?
Yeah.
Disability does? Point.
Yeah. So
all right.
I just mentioned. Yep.
Go ahead, Alan. Alan, tell me about that. No, I heard. Go, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, for federal student loans, if you can prove, if you're determined to be 100% disabled by the Health and Human Services, Social Security Administration, or the VA, then by law, you can have your loans canceled. And in fact, President Trump issued an executive order about 6 months or so ago, which automatically deleted these loans for 100% disabled veterans. Now, the problem there is that it's very hard to get a 100% disability determination.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's exceedingly hard. Yeah. And in fact, we've found cases where the Department of Education would literally hire its own doctors to challenge disability determinations. I don't know if they're doing that today. I haven't heard of anything lately.
No, that doesn't surprise me one bit that they would do that.
5 years ago, that was a little cottage industry, was buying a doctor to challenge such a claim in order to not have to forgive the loans. How hard the Department of Education and its contractors, they fight tooth and nail behind the scenes to not have to cancel any loans. They have no desire, no intentions of canceling any loans.
You know, I have firsthand knowledge of something like that, where somebody was ruled disabled, but the insurance company didn't want to pay it. And so they hired a private investigator to follow them. They insisted on all these layers, all these meetings with, quote unquote, outside doctors. And those doctors were all doctors who were either just recently lost their license or were under review. And they were so in need of cash that they were willing to write anything that the insurance company told them to do. And that's a whole nother racket. All right. So let's go west of the Rockies. Robert is in San Diego on Coast to Coast. Robert?
Hi, Ian. Thank you so much for taking my call, and hi, Alan, and thank you so much for addressing this really vital topic. I feel like there's this whole underground of people that are really suffering in silence.
Yep.
And Ian, actually, we spoke several years ago when you put a call out for people to Photoshop you with beards, and I gave you a big, giant beard.
I do remember that. That was so funny. I still have that, I think, somewhere. That was so funny.
Sweet. Oh, sweet.
That's great.
So I just wanted to say, I think there's this almost propaganda that students experience, all throughout their, middle school and high school years to go to university. And I went to college undergraduate and then graduate and, went to one of the best programs of its kind in the world at UCLA. And the education was great. But as a consequence of that, when the good paying job doesn't materialize, and I had a small business and I basically killed it trying to pay off my student loans rather than reinvesting in the business itself. So,
right.
So then I was left with nothing on both ends.
Ugh.
And, even further than that, I feel like I can't buy a house, I can't get married, and I can't have kids. I can't have a family. Like, that seems so out of reach. And the cost of that, I think, that cost to your life is far too high. If you can't even have a family and you can't have kids, you can't have a house, it's very sad if you start to think about it.
Well, and not to mention what that would do for the economy. If you were able to contribute, buy houses, do all of that, that which means buying furniture, which means Yeah, well, I agree 100%. So sorry that's happening to you. Thank you for the callback. I know we've got a bunch of people want to get on, and Sean has been hanging on in Ottawa, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast. Where are you on this, Sean?
Well, I want to take off from a caller that just spoke about a little while back, and he said, you know, I did all the responsible things, and I paid off my debt, and I funded my own education. We're not really putting the emphasis on the funders of this whole policy, and it's really based on an involuntary tax where the state or I'm calling from Canada, so I'm going to use like
right.
province or whatever. The province really or the state takes control of our tax dollars, and then after it's gone south with the manipulation of universities or colleges around the United States or Canada, then the taxpayer is held accountable for that. Now, I know that there's a lot of hardship in people trying to pay off loans in the United States. It's happening here in Canada. But we got to look at the manipulation that we've gone through and the responsibility and how it's shifted to the taxpayer again to forgive the loan. And the gentleman that said, you know, we're trillions of dollars into this, and if we just were to forgive the loans, we'd probably break about even. Listen, when you're $1 trillion in the hole and you break even, you're not even. You're going to be $1 trillion in the hole.
No. I think you're
reality, folks.
Wait. I think you're misinterpreting that line, because the guy who said it is actually on the phone with you. So go ahead, Alan. Do you want to
What I said was this. Of the $1.5 trillion outstanding in federal student loans, something like $300-500 billion of that is unpaid principal. The rest is interest and penalties and fees and other stuff. Now, additionally, for the past 10 years, the taxpayer has been booking a profit of something like $50-70 billion a year. So if you were to write off all those loans on balance, taking two steps back, the taxpayer would be breaking about even, maybe even be a little bit in the black. And remember, this is for a lending system that was initially touted as being free of interest.
Yeah. I think that's the point. And that just to make that point, Sean, that I don't know about Canada, but for example, I think if I'm getting the numbers straight in my head right now, my university gets about 17% of its funding from taxes. That's it. So, I mean, it's not like, and maybe it's just different in Canada, but there's some idea somehow that the universities are getting first cut of the pie. It's, I don't know where that's happening. I hope it's happening more often, because our universities and colleges is what expanded our economy and became a huge international draw. And our universities and colleges are the envy of the world. And you may not believe that, but you haven't spent much time in a foreign country. And the best education to have is an American education. With very few exceptions, they'll take an American, like even a almost like a mid-range American college over top colleges in many other countries because of the rigorous standards and accreditation and other things that we do. So I'm just saying that it is part of our economy, and it's an important part of the economy to keep. All right, Annie's in Alabama on a wild card line. Annie, you had a quick thought?
Thank you, Ian, for taking my call. I went to school at several highly accredited colleges and universities. And what about all of those students who maybe later will have an opportunity to transfer to another highly accredited school, and the school they want to transfer all their credits from, where they paid all that money to go to school? How are they going to transfer those credits when the school has been demolished by a bulldozer?
No, that's true. So the question is, then they have to establish a system for X number of years after the school is defunct where they can get transcripts. So a sort of central, you know, repository for that sort of thing. And if they have that, then they'll be able to get transcripts, and the transcripts are what transfers the credits. But it's a fair question. And I think we have to make sure that that's true, or people would have, you know, and maybe they intentionally wanted to take 10 years to go to school in so they could afford it as they go along. And we are looking at a major wipeout coming up of colleges and universities. And I've been talking about this since back around February, when the whole conversation really started on Coast to Coast. At least in my mind, that's how far back it goes. Andy's in Norwalk on Wildcard Line for Alan Klinge and Student Loan Justice. Andy?
Yes, great show. Yeah, first of all, I am totally against the interest rates that they're gouging the students throughout our country and Canada with. And I understand that this cumulative burden becomes so great that eventually the individual has no possibility of getting out of the swamp that they're sinking in. So here's my twofold question. Number one, is there a country whose model is acceptable to your guest that we can overhaul our system, our educational system, and the financing of that system, where students can have a chance to get a really good education, and we can maybe consider adapting some of their principles that could be used here in America and help the students, number one. Number two, how does the guest propose the future education if he wipes out the debt, the future funding for educational studies for students across our country and Canada, if we get rid of the debt, how are they going to get funded?
And all right, two good questions. Go ahead, Alan.
Those are great. A little bit of spillover between the two, but let me answer your first question first. You know, just returning bankruptcy protections to student loans should have the effect of rationalizing, stabilizing the lending system and making sure that the prices don't get out of hand like they have. So, you know, my first gut instinct would say, you know, whatever lending system might exist going forward, as long as at a minimum bankruptcy protections are there to keep the lenders honest, that probably has a pretty good shot of being stable and fair and being sustainable. Now, other countries do it a number of different ways. Australia, for example, is pretty cool in that if you use the public's money to go to college, you automatically are having to give up a certain amount of your pay for a certain number of years, and only after you earn over a certain threshold.
Oh, that's interesting.
Some people wind up paying less than was spent on them. Some people end up paying more. But it's, you know, it's not, it's a system that at least on paper looks like it probably isn't vulnerable to corruption, to right. inflating the debt, to, you know, the forces of greed that certainly in this country have blown this lending system out of the water. So I would look at something like that. But, you know, in the absence of a lending system, and quite frankly, I don't think the government really is a good, it's not a good fit for the lending, for the government to be in the lending business. So if I had my druthers, I would say that going forward, I would like to see some sort of a return to an institutional aid model where the government funds the colleges directly, prices are low enough so that basically anybody can afford it, or free for those who cannot. You know, something like that would make a lot more sense, because clearly just the presence of the government in this lending system has caused hyperinflation in the price of college. And
100%.
That really, that's the big one for me.
First time caller line, Scott is in Greensboro on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, good evening. excuse me. Both of my boys have gone to college. One is still in the military. He's got a $50,000 check waiting for the military to further his college. But my other son's is totally paid. And when we signed the agreement, I co-signed for his loans. They are all paid now. We were told when we went in there that I'm the adult, the father, and there's a term for this when a parent signs for a student loan, that you are signing responsibility.
Sure.
My ex-wife, her daughter had a similar loan. She co-signed for her. It is now paid off. Yeah. This is one step away from being a communist move, in my opinion.
Oh, dude. How do you go from that?
Stop.
I got to get to a break. But how do we go from that? Was a wonderful run-up. And now you say this is communism. Look, we'll get back to that. But interesting that you should talk about your son getting a $50,000 check from the military. I mean, it's still taxpayer money, right? Well, hang on to that. So he says this would be communism for there to be this type of educational system. Better to have it the way and just pay it off. All right. Pick it up there. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So this is so interesting, and I know that it's kind of a mirror issue. A lot of people see themselves in this issue. I'm one who pays my debts. I never borrow money that I can't repay. When I borrowed some money to finish undergrad, it was to expedite my college. And none of my kids ever had to take any college debt to graduate. But to me, I just look at it this is a bigger thing. We're in a crisis time in our country. So if I didn't get the break this time and somebody else gets a break, I guess I'm okay with that. And that's what we're suggesting, that maybe this is the time where you wipe out the student loan. It's a broken system. Giving somebody a break in a broken system, that's justice. Student loan justice, that's what's being advocated by Alan Kalinge. We'll get back to your questions coming up next. We'll wrap up this concept that this is somehow communism. That was right after he gave an example from Australia, which is a capitalist economy, and they've got a different system. But why isn't this communism next? On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Anybody who has had student loans, paid them off, or did so well in life that they didn't ever have to take out student loans should feel super proud of themselves, and I know I do. But why isn't your proposal communism, Alan?
Well, first of all, you raise a great point. And let me say to the previous caller, people in the military should be very careful. We have many, many, many members who fell into this student loan scam as a result of their military service. You know, the GI Bill does not go as far as you think. And people, you know, they go on deployment and, you know, maybe their wife is taking care of their bills. And all of a sudden, yeah, that $35,000 in loans turns into a $100,000 nightmare. So don't be so quick to, you know, your son should be very careful. Second of all, regarding communism, I would urge the caller to Google A. Wayne Johnson and Tucker Carlson. Wayne Johnson is the former COO of the federal lending system. He's a veteran. He's a strong anti-socialist, anti-communist. And he would be the first to agree that this lending system is broken, that widespread cancellation is needed, and that bankruptcy rights need to be restored. And I could also point the caller to any number of articles written by people like, people from places like the Cato Institute, from George Mason University. I could point to op-eds in the National Review, in the American Conservative about a month and a half ago, in the Weekly Standard. All of them are calling for the return of bankruptcy protections to these loans. Now, I think I understand where your caller is going with this, you know, the Bernie Sanders model of free college for everybody and all that. Well, we're not advocating for that. What we're advocating is that the current broken system gets fixed. And at this point, we gave Congress 15 years to simply return bankruptcy protections to the loans. And by the way, there are two great bills in the House and Senate right now, H.R. 2648, S.1414. But I would urge people to push those bills. But look at Wayne Johnson talking to Tucker Carlson, and he will lay it out for you. If you don't want to believe me, believe Wayne Johnson, or read it for yourself in the National Review or any number of very conservative journals.
And I'll just make this point. I mean, the idea of the bankruptcy protection is in our Constitution. That's why it's not communism. And our founding fathers were wise enough to see that this was necessary. We took it out of the student loan system, as you pointed out. And without it, without that protection, look what happens. So President Trump has never declared personal bankruptcy. But I think like six times he has used bankruptcy protection Chapter 11 on his companies so that he didn't end up losing any money personally. He didn't lose his own personal wealth because he was able to file for Chapter 11. Well, this is all that we're talking about. It's like, why should somebody get wiped out because they went to college? It doesn't help our economy. It's not going to expand our economy at a time when there's fewer jobs. It only seems to make sense. But let's leave that there for now. I think we adequately addressed that. And we'll start with Rusty in Pensacola on Coast to Coast AM. Rusty?
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. Hey, first of all, wonderful guest. Great show. Nice topic. And my thoughts are this. I graduated in 79 from the University of Florida, and I paid the loan back. I paid it back at $30 a month. It was a national direct loan, NDL, and it was simple to pay back.
Sure.
And to me, I'm just wondering, what's going on nowadays? What are demanding from these kids now?
Well, I think that's the whole point. It's all about scale. So, yeah,
well,
thank you. Go ahead.
You know, Steve, how much did you borrow? I'm guessing probably, a couple thousand bucks or something?
About $5,000, I think.
$5,000, yeah. Well, the average undergrad is now leaving school with over $40,000 in loans. And, you know, back in 79, the loans were basically dischargeable in bankruptcy. So the good faith was in the lending system back then. That has gone away. The good faith has been taken out of the lending system. And so it's really become a predatory lending. I call it a big government monstrosity. And more times
right.
I can repeat that, the better.
Let's go. Wildcard line. Charles is in Denver on Coast to Coast. Charles?
Hey, you guys have a great program. Thank you so much for the service you're providing and letting people know a lot about that. Both of you have different views. Let me tell you, I am a professor in a pharmacy school, and I'd rather not mention the name unless I ask.
We won't press you, but go ahead.
I'm an associate professor. I'm an emeritus professor, and things have completely changed. Really, it's capitalistic in the way I use it in a different way, in the sense of buyer beware. If you're a student now, you better have a job. You better have a major that is sellable. And because there's a lot of grants now, and in medical school, we can force a student, force them literally to go into a given area. Let's say pediatrician is a female, a black female, African-American female in pediatrics, no charge. She can go through school on a free ride. No money ever. She can do everything. If you want to be a plastic surgeon in L.A., you're in big trouble. You're going to pay it. And other majors are dying. I'm not going to say what majors you shouldn't major in, because I make some enemies. I'll mention one, because it's almost doesn't exist, and that's sociology.
Yeah,
I was a physics major and got out of physics because they wanted me to go into engineering, and I ended up in pharmacy and got a pharmacy doctorate, and could teach in a number of schools. But there's no one in that area that cannot get a grant. So it's all about grants with majors that sell. And the bankruptcy thing is just like going and buying a Bugatti. Why would you buy a Bugatti? I mean,
right.
I don't know why anyone would do the little research to pick a field. I'm stunned.
No, I think this is good. I'm going to sum you up here, too. Let's give Alan, in the time that we have here, we got to give Alan a chance to jump in, because his point is so valid that we should point that out, that there are certain majors, even for undergrad, where you can get grant money because they need people to do those jobs, or they're looking for those types of people. For example, if they needed more male teachers, you might be able to get more grant money if you were studying education and you're a guy. So there's all of that in play, but the grant system is different than this system.
Well, that's right. You know, and there are loan cancellations programs in place for people who, for example, work at a nonprofit for 10 years. But, you know, the truth is the bad faith has so overtaken this lending system. You know, for the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, for example, last year, 99.2% of the people who worked at a nonprofit for 10 years had every reason to believe their loans would be forgiven, applied for the forgiveness. They found out the hard way that no, not only you didn't dot your I's, you didn't cross your T's, largely bureaucratic reasons, 99.2% of the people were told that no, you're not getting your loans forgiven. You still have to do 10 more years. And oh, by the way, you owe double or triple what you came in with. So it is a buyer beware situation. I think that's right. It doesn't. It shouldn't be that way. I mean, in my opinion, you know, if there's a pothole in front of your house, do you want the city to come out and put a sign that says warning pothole?
Or just
or would you rather the city just comes and fixes the damn hole?
Right.
That's kind of where I come down on that.
No, I'm with you. Let's get Danny in San Bruno. I just want to get everybody in before the top of the hour. Danny is on a wild card line for Alan Kalinch. Go ahead, Danny.
Hey, Alan. Excellent show tonight. I've got a top 10 list coming at you. One sentence. I can do it in a minute. You ready for this?
Okay.
DOD pays student debt. Brain chips and vending machines at colleges and universities. Number three, presidential debt forgiveness and compensation to the people that have been abused with the neural technology. Celebrate it rather than allow the continued abuse of one student belongs. I was raised in a neighborhood where a secret society, the kids, the parents were looking through their eyes with neural implants and they were graduating cum laude and cum laude. Number five, raised in the neighborhood where the kids got it. Number six, cum laude, they're graduating cum laude. ROTC, I signed a contract which allows the U.S. military to use any technology on me, including futuristic technology. One Mexican student and myself, they found out we already had an implant. Number seven, DOD, thank you for your service. Number eight, without transparency, there is no true freedom. Number nine, all ROTC, I command you to have a barbecue on Memorial Day. And thank you much. Number
okay.
10, what do you think, DOD? Because.
Okay. Well, that was it. There's a lot there. I don't know if we have time to address all of those, but I hope that
I
you
agree
feel
with
better.
Number one and number eight. Kind of threw me on the other ones, but yeah. Number one and number eight, I agree with. Presidential cancellation of loans. Number eight sounded.
Well, and let's all hope that we have a good Memorial Day and we celebrate those people who have given their lives. And Veterans Day, of course, is when we celebrate the living ones.
Absolutely.
East of the Rockies, Richmond, Virginia, JJ is hanging on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, great job, Ian. I think you do a good job.
Thank you.
And, I just wanted to know if you or Alan believe in the Nassara Act.
I don't know the Nassara Act. What is he talking about?
The Nassara Act. I'm not familiar with that.
Supposedly it was signed into, the military, Navy SEALs, into Congress by President Bill Clinton. And our current president would have to socially enact it, where it would forgive all debts, not just student loan, but everything. And
the National Economic Security and Recovery Act, a set of proposed economic reforms suggested during the 1990s, doesn't look like it got signed, but I'm looking. While I do that, let's go ahead and grab another caller, because I hate to talk about something that we don't have in front of us. Maybe Alan, you want to take a quick look at it, too. I got Ann in Oceanside, California, for Alan Kalinch. Go ahead, Ann.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just kind of have a viewpoint. Because college-educated people usually make more than people who don't go to college.
Yeah.
And even though the economy now, it may be different as far as jobs and so forth, but on the whole, they will make more than people who never went to college. And it just seems like to forgive the loans. I think there should be some reform. Maybe they should just have some a period of time where they're not putting interest on because the economy is bad right now. But it seems like people who never went to college because they couldn't afford it, you know, it causes a little bit of resentment as far as the class thing. It's like kind of almost semi-elitist, although I know more people that go to college, they aren't necessarily well off. They may
yeah.
be more middle class. But I'm just saying, and as far as the bankruptcy thing, I mean, if they go back to that, because I know in the 70s, someone who graduated from law school with very large loans, the day they graduated, they declared bankruptcy. And within a week, they're working, making a very huge salary at a big law firm. And so they're going to have to, and that causes a little bit of resentment of people who just couldn't afford to take advantage to go to college.
All right. Well, Alan, your thought on that?
Yeah, first of all, second point first. Back in the 70s, when student loans were treated the same way as all other loans in bankruptcy court, only about 1/3 of 1% of student loans were discharged in bankruptcy. So this was a myth perpetuated in the media by the lending interests that saw an opportunity to make money. So there was never this crisis. People were never flocking to bankruptcy court promptly after graduation. As far as the resentment goes and people who go to college earn more money, statistically, it is said that people with college degrees on average earn $1 million more over their lifetime. But to directly correlate that to the fact that they went to college is quite a dicey proposition.
Remember what they're saying is you even need now a college education to get in on many factory floors because things are being run by computer. So it's not like, I don't know that that's quite the myth that that anybody would suggest.
Well, in many ways, college is sort of the new high school, right? Well, back in the 50s,
right.
If you wanted to be a nurse, you showed up to a hospital, and in a month and a half, hey, you were a nurse. Today, I don't think you can become a nurse without a master's degree. It's just you have to go to college to do that.
To become a registered nurse, yeah. At certain levels, you can get nursing at different levels, but yeah.
Right.
All right, let me get
and
to... We still got people who are dying to talk to you, so let me get to Rudy in Allentown, west of the Rockies. Rudy?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I just want to talk about, I think it's even worse than only paying back the loans. My wife was defrauded with her degree. She went to University of Phoenix, and she was supposed to be a pharmacist. She ended up graduating with healthcare management degree, worthless degree.
Well, I don't know I don't know this case, and I'm not willing to vouch for that. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're lying. But University of Phoenix, I do know some people who have done well with that. But I do know exactly what you're talking about when you say sometimes there may be a bigger promise than the delivery once the degree comes in. And I'm not sure where the accountability is on that. And I know that, for example, in what I do, we have to make sure at our university that everything that we teach is a direct correlation to the educational goals that are expected in that particular field. So there's never a disparity. Somebody will graduate and they'll know exactly where their education will qualify them to do. But a quick thought on that, Alan?
Yeah, there are tens of thousands of students who were provably defrauded by their colleges, most of them for-profit colleges. On paper, there is supposed to be accountability. So if they can prove fraud, then their loans are supposed to be canceled by filing something called a defense to repayment. Well, under the current administration and even under the last administration, the Department of Education has done everything possible to not cancel those loans. The last I checked, out of 244,000 people who should have gotten their loans canceled, only two people had actually gotten their loans canceled. So this is the sort of big government bureaucracy that I'm really railing against here. This is the bureaucracy is against us on this. And
this is where we got to shake things up. I think you did a fabulous job doing that. I could grab another caller, but I think we would be tilling some of the same ground. Sorry for everybody who waited and tried to get on. I did the best I could to get as many callers as I could. Alan, thank you so much.
Thank
Keep
you,
up the
Ian.
Good work.
It's been a lot of fun.
We will revisit this in the fall. So save
Absolutely.
Some time for me, because we'll know come September and October how things are going to be changing with regard to U.S. colleges and universities. And that will start.
A very fast moving problem, and that'd be a good time to hook up again.
We will do that. I promise you we will. Thank you so much. And I just go back to that first hour suggestion I had. Mentioned it last night too. Please, it's Memorial Day weekend. If you've got kids, explain to them why this is what it is, why we do it, what's the ritual for. And if you can't do the usual ritual that you may have practiced in the past because of COVID-19 or changes in civic observations for these sort of things, find a new way to do it. It's always important to remember those who have sacrificed for us within the families and even people you didn't know. Of every religion, of every political persuasion, they all gave blood in the worst possible ways. So let's remember them this weekend, going back to every war we've ever had. In the meantime, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.